Nightlife News Breakdown.
Federal parliamentarians return to the fray in Canberra today for the final sitting weeks before the budget session. And the Albanese government's got a couple of tough battles to negotiate over the climate and referendum proposals. The government's seeking to pass its bill, known as the Referendum Machinery Bill, to change existing referendum laws, laying out the groundwork for the upcoming vote on the Indigenous Voice to Parliament, which is set to occur later this year. Now, the Coalition says it won't support the bill unless it gets three things: funding for pamphlets to be sent to voters to inform them about the voice, the establishment of an individual yes and no campaigns, and equal funding for those two campaigns. The government's fine to see pamphlets sent out. It says it won't budge on injecting equal funding into both yes and no campaigns. And the government's also seeking to get its signature climate change proposal to establish a safeguards mechanism through Parliament. So to do that, it'll need the votes of the Greens and two others in the Senate. Well, watching the parliamentary wrangling closely is Paul Bongiorno, veteran political journalist and commentator and author at The New Daily. Paul, good evening. Welcome, and welcome again to the Nightlife News Breakdown.
Well, thank you very much, Philip. I'm just exhausted listening to your rundown on what's happening in the Senate.
Can we start first up with the federal government's proposals on the referendum? They want to update the so-called machinery bill. Now, this is the one regarding the rules by which a referendum's conducted. What's the history here, and why do they want to update it? What's wrong with the existing legislation? We've had referenda in the past, haven't we? They seem to have worked all right.
Yeah, well, that's right. But it's a long time since we last had a referendum, and the original Machinery Act goes all the way back to the beginning of the last century. And for one thing, they made the point that, funding pamphlets is okay, but, this is the age of the internet and online and social media. So they wanted to update and upgrade all of that. Mm. But the other interesting thing to tell you is that going back to the original Referendum Machinery Act, going back after Federation in 1901, there was never public funding for referenda. It was John Howard in the run-up to 1999 that introduced public funding, and he did that for one reason. He was convinced, and rightly, that that private enterprise of big companies would bankroll the Yes campaign and nobody would jump on board the No campaign. Now, Andrew Robb, who was pushing for the Republic referendum, he told me halfway through that not only had big business closed its purses against the Yes campaign, big business had done that. And I said, well, why? And he said, because Prime Minister Howard and Nick Minchin, his minister, were threatening them that they wouldn't be treated kindly if they bankrolled the Yes campaign. So that's the background to that. Now, coming forward to this referendum, the Liberals are being found out, really. Their argument is quite spurious that, oh, we're opposing this bill because it locks in future referendums to this machinery. Well, I'm sorry, you can't lock in future parliaments. As we're seeing now, this parliament's making its own arrangements. A future parliament for a future referendum can make its own.
I mean,
I was just going to say that this is a spurious deal maker that I have to tell you unmasks that Peter Dutton and most of his party room do not back this referendum. Mm. And this week in the Senate and the following week in the Senate, when another bill comes in, that will be exposed.
Some people might see it as curious, though, and odd that the government, won't openly say, yes, of course, we'll have equal funding for the yes and no sides. Why wouldn't they do that? I mean, I think a lot of Australians might think, well, that's okay. Let's see the no side. What's wrong with that?
Well, I think there's a false equality here myself. And the false equality is that the no case, that is to deny a recognition in our constitution as asked for by a process that was nationwide and democratic through the Uluru Statement from the Heart, and to be given the teeth, as one backbencher said to me, he said, look, The blackfellas want to be recognised and they want to have a say after a couple of centuries. Now, that's a fairly crude way of putting it, but I think it sums it up pretty well. And the fact of the matter is, quibbling over whether there might be high court challenges or quibbling over what the blackfellas might say to the whitefellas, I think is frankly irrelevant and a vestige of past attitudes. So why would you want to fund a no campaign with taxpayers' dollars that's saying we don't want to recognise the First Nations people and we don't want to give them any sort of say? I have a lot of sympathy for the fact that the yes and no people go and find your own backers and fund your own case.
Mm. All right, so what the government's saying, there'll be no government funding for either side. In other words,
no. The government will help. For example, there will be taxpayers' money for the pamphlet, and that's about it. I noticed that David Pocock, the independent senator for the ACT, says that's fine.
What pamphlet is this?
This is the pamphlet, which obviously will be online, but apparently it's going to be posted out, that will give the case for the yes and a case for the no. But David Pocock is worried that the case for the no must be fact-checked, and it must be fact-checked for, amongst other things, racism.
Okay. Oh, so there is going to be a taxpayer-funded yes and no pamphlet then?
Yes, and that pamphlet obviously will be online as well.
Right. This is Federal Government Minister Katie Gallagher. She claims it's extraordinary that the Coalition is standing in the way of the Referendum Machinery Act.
Ideally, this would be a piece of legislation that goes through with the entire chamber's support. That would be the ideal situation. If we can't reach that, we will go through the next pathway, which is trying to ensure that we have the 39 votes that are required to get through.
What do you think? I mean, you're probably right that the Coalition seems to be, at the most, they're not going to support it, are they? But the question has always been whether they actually oppose it. What do you think's going on in the Coalition? What are they edging towards?
Well, they're edging towards no, and not all of them, by the way.
No.
The fact of the matter is that a majority, or the view is, and speaking to some of the party room, the view is that Peter Dutton shares the attitude of, for want of a better label, conservatives in the party room who are opposed to the referendum. The other thing that's been said to me, by opposing the machinery bill and seizing on a spurious reason to do so, is just muddying the waters, and it's part of the confusion that will be a hallmark of the what they're calling the soft no campaign. Mm. And I think that's the way to read it myself.
Mm. In other words, Mr. Dutton won't be endorsing a yes vote, but we'll just be asking questions all the way to the referendum day.
We'll be sowing as much confusion as we can. And we say, oh, no, we're for recognition. We're just not for this sort of recognition.
Mm.
Well, this sort of recognition, of course, is the one that was demanded by a democratic nationwide process that went on for 5 years. Look, there's always going to be a minority who don't like it, both black and white. We've got it now. That's not the point. We live in a democracy.
Yeah, there is a yes and there is a that's right. There is a yes and no side here, aren't there? Not everyone agrees with the proposal. Not even all Aboriginal people agree with the proposal.
No, precisely. Well, precisely, and that's the point. And then you can have arguments about the quality of their disagreement and whether what they're saying in many cases makes any sense at all.
Mm.
I mean, for example, I'll give you a quick example on this. Why is the condition that we must first address domestic violence in Aboriginal families or First Nation families before we can say yes to recognition? It's almost saying that unless the Aboriginal families have a better standard than the epidemic of domestic violence that is nationwide, we won't give them recognition. Logically, and I did clear thinking when I was in year 12, it doesn't make any sense to me.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. And, of course, we've talked before about what the Coalition's electoral push is here, because, after all, it was in all those teal seats which will vote for the voice that the Liberals lost so much ground.
Well, Philip, just quickly on that, you've put your finger right on it. There's a competition going on amongst the Teals. They've already set up grassroots campaigns for yes and to see who can get the biggest yes vote in their electorate. These are the former blue ribbon Liberal electorates. And on another matter, the matter of the safeguards mechanism, I was talking to a fairly senior businessman today who is shaking his head at what strategy the Peter Dutton opposition has to win back those seats. He simply can't see it.
Mm. On that safeguard legislation, this is the other thorny bit of wrangling the government has on its hands this fortnight, getting its signature climate change proposal to establish a safeguards mechanism through Parliament. This would essentially affect the 200-odd biggest emitters in the country. Yeah. Greens leader Adam Bandt has been saying, look, we'll support it, even though we don't like it. But he wants certain conditions, one of which, of course, is the commitment that there'll be no new gas and coal projects. Where are we at with this? Where's the Adam Bandt at with it?
Well, first of all, you know, there is absolutely no doubt that if you take the science and the latest science coming from the IPCC, the International Panel for Climate Change set up by the United Nations, we do need the whole planet, the planet Earth needs to do something desperately to try and cut emissions. There's no doubt about it. And if you had your way, you'd say, let's stop all fossil fuel emissions now.
Mm.
But that is not possible. You know, I mean, it's not possible for a lot of reasons. But the point being made is that the opposition, that is the Liberals and the Nationals, have just pulled right out of it. They're not even trying to amend anything. So they're not coming up with any way in which Australia could help the global reduction of emissions, because you have to start at home, and they're leaving it to the Greens and the crossbench to come to some sort of accommodation. Now, I've got a lot of sympathy for the Greens in saying this. You're blaming us if it goes down. Well, how about blaming the Liberals and the Nationals if it goes down? Because they don't want to do anything. They're not even putting up an alternative proposal, which, by the way, the Business Council of Australia today and the Australian Chamber of Commerce and Industry, the two biggest groups representing business and industry, urged the Parliament, brackets, the Liberals and Nationals, to support the safeguard mechanism, saying that it is necessary. And it's not surprising, because the safeguard mechanism adopted by the Labor Party, most of the homework for that was done by the Business Council of Australia.
Mm. This is Adam Bandt, by the way, saying they're not asking for much.
And we will pass the government's policy and put it into law, just do one thing. Stop making the problem worse. So we are not asking for the perfect. We are asking for the bare minimum. We are asking for what the UN Secretary General is asking for, our Pacific Island neighbours are asking for.
Mm. All right, let's move to the 20th anniversary of the Gulf War. Amid the talk of the possible war in the Pacific over Taiwan, we mark the 20th anniversary of Australia joining the US-led coalition in the Second Gulf War. Independent MP Andrew Wilkie, who at the time blew the whistle on Australia's flawed justifications for entering the wars, used the anniversary of the invasion of Iraq to call for the federal parliament to have the power to vote on whether or not Australia enters an armed conflict.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a powerful point, isn't it? That at the moment, the prime minister can commit the country to war almost on his or her own, but certainly they don't need parliamentary approval. Another voice of opposition to Australia's involvement in the war in 2003 was Simon Crean. He spoke this morning on radio. This is what he had to say.
If we're to actually enter this new difficult era, yes, in the context of a seemingly strengthened alliance, we've got to make sure our own position is fundamentally established based on the best available information, not just following blindly.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think here? The Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, himself seemed open to the idea of Parliament having some sort of say before we commit forces to any future war. This is Mr. Albanese today.
And I've made clear my own view that parliamentarians should be given the chance to express their views following a Cabinet decision to go to war. We have referred the issue to an inquiry now being conducted.
Maybe Parliament will get a say, do you think, Bond?
Well, I've got to say a couple of things about that. Anthony Albanese, in effect, has said exactly what Bob Hawke and John Howard did. Hawke ahead of the first Gulf War and Howard ahead of the Iraq engagement. Basically, if Cabinet decides, the process is Cabinet decides, it goes to the party room, and the party room can accept or reject. They normally, if their Cabinet has decided, they accept, and then it goes to the Parliament. And if it's the government putting into the Parliament, the lower house, for one, will wave it through, will say yes. So in a sense, that's not saying, a hell of a lot. But there is this inquiry into an international armed conflict decision-making. We do know, for example, even the great Bob Hawke had his party room turn over his giving a green light to the MX missile tests in the Pacific. He said yes to Reagan, came back to Australia, and the Labor caucus said no. So you can have your party room overturn the executive. It's rare, but it can happen. It's good to hear Simon Crean. He was, I remember it vividly, he got up in the Parliament as the leader of the opposition with George W. Bush sitting in the Parliament and said, great friends can differ. We differ. We don't support, going to war. Crean turned up when the first troops flew out to Iraq. He turned up to support the troops because they were doing what the government of the day asked them to do. But now when it comes to war with Taiwan, a couple of points I think need to be made. The first one was, and I think we need to remind Australians of this, the Howard government had a neutral position on whether Taiwan should finally be taken over by mainland China. Because we, like the United States of America, accept what's called the One China policy.
That's right.
That policy accepts that Taiwan is a province of China, and that the capital of China is Beijing and not Taiwan.
We don't recognise Taiwan as an independent China. We don't.
No, we do not. But I think one of the problems we've got is that the way in which Xi has treated Hong Kong, the whole idea of one country, two systems. Went down the drain when Hong Kong was not allowed to have even a semblance of true democracy. Mm. So what you've got over on Taiwan Island is a democratic island, a democratic state. When I use that state, I'm not using it technically, but that now sees that if it is taken over or agrees by vote to go back and be completely united, with Beijing, that its democratic traditions will be trashed. And I think that this is what's making everybody a bit wary. But it's good to hear our Richard Miles on the weekend on Insiders saying that because we're going to get nuclear submarines does not mean that we automatically would go to war. The problem with it, of course, Philip, is have a look at Australia over the last century, and we, more than even the United Kingdom or Canada, were the first to put our hands up and show our flag at every war America decided to go in.
We do. That is true. All right, Paul, it's good to talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. Good night.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.